people will talk.
Welcome to another episode of the Elaborate Podcast. We're not exactly in the studio right now. You can hear the doors locking of the not studio. It's a car because we're traveling today, October 31st. I think the restrictions in Ireland are easing. Probably going to be easier to travel there. So on this team of travel, we decided to go around in the car. And also Maria's giving me a lift home. Two birds with one stone. And speaking of Maria, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Can't see a thing right now.
Don't worry, I'm going to put your visor down so you can see better. So the format is going to be a little bit different. I've chosen top 10 places to visit in Ireland, and you're going to argue with me basically. Two things you're going to do. You're going to like say, well, I would go there, or I wouldn't, or yeah, also there's that place in Spain that does the same thing and better, or something like that.
Oh yeah, because I'm normally say
so patriotic.
Okay, well let's give it a go then.
Okay, so starting at number 10. Sorry, I don't know where that voice came from. The Leprechaun Museum in Dublin.
Wasn't expecting that whatsoever.
It's a strong start. Well, the reason I would choose this, right, is because it, like, leprechauns are a very typical and stereotypical view of Ireland. I mean, every St. Patrick's Day parade around the world, you're going to see them as well. But I think it's a must-see. It's a small museum, but it's a must-see because it's a gateway to a richer experience of Irish culture. Because there you can find captivating storytellers and mythology, both of which are integral to the Irish psyche. And nobody knows where the mischievous fairies come from, so maybe you can solve the mystery. How does that sound? It gets better, but how does that sound?
Sounds a bit like you've just read their brochure or something.
I read what I wrote.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good sell, but you can understand why it's at number 10.
Well, it's really strange because I was under the impression that, like, going back to the Book of Invasions in Irish mythology, the leprechauns actually appear and help one of the sides in the conflict. I was
really,
yes, but apparently they actually are from the 1500s, 1600s. They start making an appearance, and as I mentioned, nobody actually knows where they come from, for example. So I mean, they are, you know, just this thing, they're fairies or whatever. Now in Spain's north, maybe in Galicia, you know, would you, are there tiny beings that exist? Or people, you know, according to the mythology?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, well, Galicia obviously shares a lot of the Celtic stuff. But even around Asturias, and I think it's, maybe it's more obvious in the north, but I'm sure, you know, even like in the center of the country, and I'm sure all over the place, there are still these sort of traditions about creatures. I don't know if necessarily small. I suppose those ones are more popular in like places with a lot of forests and things like that, because you're not gonna get, you know, like a gnome jumping around in the middle of really dry flat fields in Castilla or something like that.
Fair point. I think what's surprising about this one as well is that there's a museum. You don't see many magical museums around the place.
Yeah, I mean, it screams like, you know, tourist gimmick thing.
Well, I don't think it is. Actually, I think the whole point is, as I did say, it's a gateway to a richer culture. I don't think you're listening.
I did listen, of course. I thought you were just, you know, making it, because you make everything sound better, so.
Well, I mean, okay, so I'm going to ask you yes or no. Would you go there?
If everything else was closed, then yes.
I don't know how to react to that. Okay, number nine. Okay, so the first two here aren't maybe my favorite ones in the list, but the Guinness Storehouse is the most popular museum in Ireland, the number one destination for people. And any fan of Flann O'Brien will tell you, a pint of plain's your only man. But as soon as you're in the door, you see the lease that gives Guinness ownership of that land for 1,000 years. And it is kind of impressive. There are like interactive screens, kind of an immersive experience where people are acting on the screen as well. You can pull your own points and get a certificate, and at the top you can see 360 views of Dublin with your complimentary points. And there's also potato crisps that have the flavour of Guinness that, you know, I wouldn't be a big fan of, but they're there. So there's not really much to say about this. I mean, even if you're not a big drinker, it is kind of something that is emblematic of Ireland's. So very quickly, would you say yes or no?
I would say yes, and I'm not a big drinker, but I know you've been and you're not a big drinker either, so you must have thought it was good.
I did. I thought it was so good. It's number nine in our list. At number eight, and staying in the Irish capital, we go to Dublinia. The heart of Viking and medieval Dublin. I have been here, and I do enjoy this place. And you, with your historical and archaeological background, you might enjoy this as well. So, I mean, I think the reason I chose this, apart from knowing it's a great experience, when you think of Ireland and its history, it's always the Celtic thing that people talk about. But we are also a Viking people. I remember saying this to a guy in a metro, some guy playing the violin. There was a reason for me telling him, and then he was like, "No, you're not. You're Celtic. You're not Viking. We're Viking. You're not Viking." And he's very angry.
Viking? Where was he from?
He was Spanish. I don't know.
Oh, really?
And mental, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of cool because it's not just the Viking experience. It also goes into medieval Dublin as well, and you can see what the home and hearth were like, how long people lived. Kind of old cures. You can go into a Viking longboat, how they cure toothache. Spoiler alert, it didn't work. And I think that was built there because they did find a huge Viking hall, like in Dublin, when they were building a road, which is the same old story. So Dublinia, Viking and medieval Ireland's, again, very interactive, lots of things to kind of touch and see, and they have like these figurines and these reconstructions, and it's quite nice. Would you go there, and why?
Well, of course, I mean, first of all, because you sell it very well, so yes, I would go there. Sounds like a historical place. And from the pictures that you showed me years ago, you get to wear a helmet with horns.
That could have been in Adair, though. I think I can't remember if it was there or in Adair. Because I think in Adair there is a place where...
No, it was in Dublin.
It was in Dublin, yeah?
Yes, because you're with Karen.
Fair enough. We're just mentioning all the people I know in Ireland the last few episodes. So shout out to Carol. And what else was I going to say? I mean, because, like, you know, after the Vikings, the Normans, they built our castles as well. So the castles in Spain, they're a little bit different because they're not Norman castles. Even the Normans actually did go to Africa and spread quite widely. Most of your castles were built by the Muslims. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that is fair, yes. Well, no, that's not fair. What am I saying? Most of the castles were built in answer to... Bueno, both. Let's say both. Because I'm going to alienate a lot of people. But yeah, there are a lot of castles from that period, of like where Muslims and Christians shared the place, not very amicably. And yes.
Okay. Interesting. Seven is a magical number in Ireland. At number seven in our list is our final stop in Dublin, the Book of Kells. There is something that we did see before the summer holidays in the National Library in Madrid, which is all these illuminated manuscripts. That was, and also we saw Dante's Inferno, actually, one of the original copies of that. So a long tradition in Europe of monks, and well, Dante wasn't a monk but you know, people illuminating manuscripts and having these books with pictures essentially, and the Kells, Book of Kells, is essentially this. So there's a clear link between Ireland and Spain here, because I've seen this stuff in Madrid and also in Ireland. It is possible. Over 1,000 years old, tells the story of the four Gospels and a New Testament. And if you're interested in Irish animation, because Ireland does produce a lot of animation, The Secret of Kells is an animated masterpiece which tells a story of a young lad trying to finish the book, but he can't because of the Viking incursions. And we spoke about the Vikings there a while ago, so they're popping up again. And I guess, I mean, people say apparently that the long library, or long room, actually, sorry, the long room, looks like the Jedi library or archives in Star Wars. But not being a Star Wars fan, I couldn't give a shit about that. But would you go to see that? Of course you would.
Well, of course I would, and I'm just got it. This is so far down the list.
It gets better. It gets better, because number six is the Hunt Museum in the sunny southwest. Well, as sunny as you can get in the sunny southwest, in Limerick City, which is home to one of the longest footbridges in Europe, if you care about that kind of information. But the Hunt Museum, I've been there as a wee lad, but I didn't know that they had Egyptian amulets, paintings by Renoir and Picasso, and the Ancient Cross, which dates back to the 800 CE current era, for those who don't know that. And apart from that, there are a host of temporary exhibitions. Right now they have something about the Wild Atlantic Way and paintings inspired by that. And then the building itself was built by an Italian architect called Davis Ducartes, and it's a jewel in itself. So, I mean, you are an Egyptologist. I think you've done something with Egypt, to the best of my recollection. Would you...
This whole theme from previous podcast seasons is coming back. I'm everything. But what do you like most when you went to see it? Because obviously it seems like it's a popular place to go and see when you're at school, maybe?
No, I went with my father. But no, I mean, it's just like this guy amassed, he's a rich person, and he amassed this huge personal collection and he turned into a museum, essentially. And before he died, and after he died, it became the Hunt Museum, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting because, I mean, thematically, there's not really a consistent thread. Yeah. But, I mean, if you're in Limerick and you want to see stuff that's from ancient Egypt and artistic masterpieces and things from old Ireland's past as well, kind of from Celtic times, I think it's a jewel. I'm not sure if it's something that's marketed a lot. I mean, if you come to Limerick as a tourist, probably you come across it, but you know, people would probably tend to go more to St. John's Castle and maybe other places as well. So it's something that you could easily miss, but going there, I think,
so
is
that's
definitely
why it's in the list. That people can know about it.
That's why it's a list as well. And St. John's Castle, is also there. It's also cool because you have like CGI there, interactive exhibitions. I was there 2 years ago. There's a cannon outside. And from the top, you can see the side of a pub, which has a mural, which had a mural that was very famous in Limerick and kind of shows Ireland's modern artistic impulses. But that was painted over and people were like, you know, in uproar, but it was only painted over with white paint, because they're going to put another mural there. So it wasn't like a desecration, just renewing the art that was there. So that's the top five. I'm all cultured out. So here's a musical break, and we'll be back after that with the top five things to see in Ireland. We're back with number four. Killarney National Park. Have you ever heard of Killarney?
Actually, the other day it was, I saw it mentioned somewhere as one of the most beautiful landscapes in the world or something like that, even. Is that possible?
Well, beauty is subjective and in the eye of the beholder, but I would say there's a good chance of that, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it is an amazing place. I'll tell you why it is an amazing place, because it is a designated biosphere by UNESCO, which links to similar natural reserves all over the world, and it's a huge park encompassing the McGilligoddy Reeks, Ireland's highest mountain range, the renowned lakes of Killarney, and last but not least, Muckross House and Gardens, a sprawling mansion from the 19th century. I have been there cycling around, and it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, so it is a great place. And
it feels more like a quiz when I'm trying to guess which ones are the ones you really enjoy.
And if this was like a tourist spot, as an advert, I would say there's 40 shades of green and you're likely to see them in Killarney National Park.
With an American accent.
Because, well, I saw something recently as well from a parliamentary or Dáil debate in Ireland in 1964, where some politician was giving out about Ireland's tourist campaign focus, which was focusing on leprechauns and Twiddly-Dee and all that stuff. So it's interesting, even back then people are thinking like, oh, come on lads, there's enough of that now. Now, have you ever heard of Galway?
I have.
Good. That's good. We'll take it back. You go to Killarney and you'll probably go to Galway as well. I'll ask you though after I tell you this, because Galway is home to the Spanish Arch, which is close to the Galway City Museum, and it was built in 1584. And here's a surprising fact: it survived a tsunami caused by the Lisbon earthquake in 1755. It once formed part of the defensive wall, and I guess it's called the Spanish Arch because a lot of Spanish sailors after the ill-fated Spanish Armada landed in Galway and all over the country as well, and the British who were occupying the country made it a crime to help these forlorn and shipwrecked sailors, but Irish people did help them sometimes. And according to anecdotal history, any tanned Irish person is descended from these Spanish sailors. So as a Spanish person and somebody who is moderately tanned,
oh thanks,
would you go and see this thing that's named after your country?
Well, I mean, how couldn't I? And also the reason why I've heard of Galway is because in Spain, a lot of times when we ask people or when we talk about Ireland, people say to you that they've been to Galway.
That's very true. And for any American listeners, you might know it as Galloway.
Those letters aren't there, but fair enough.
So now we're in the top three, and we're staying in Cork. No, we're not. We're going to Cork. Sorry, I lost my mind there for a second. And we're going to Blarney Castle. Blarney Castle is significant because the Blarney Stone is there. And if you kiss it, you get the gift of Blarney or of the gab, so you become very good at talking. And to do it, you have to be held upside down by the ankles, and you can see like the big drop that's there as well, which I have also done as well.
You got held by the ankles as well.
I did, yeah, and not for the faint-hearted, but it's really, really nice just to do something that's kind of, you know, it's historical but a bit fun as well.
Do you get the gift of the gab then?
Well, you tell me.
Yes, I think you definitely need.
Yeah, are there any magical stones? I've forgotten this part of the podcast. In Spain, are there any magical stones? If you kiss them, you get something, and I don't mean diseases.
Not that I know of, but I mean, I'm sure there is, because the folklore in Spain is very varied. So I'm sure there's somewhere where you get it, but it, I don't know. It's more likely to jump in a well or some random thing like that. I'll do some research.
Please do. Actually, I said the top three. This is actually the top two. So Cork was the penultimate stop. We're going now to what I consider the best place in Ireland. Drum roll, please. The Neolithic tomb of Newgrange in County Meath, also known as Ireland's Ancient East. Built by simple farmers, it has withstood the elements for over 5,200 years. The mound itself is a marvel. But every winter solstice, that's December 21st for people who don't know, light from the sunrise enters an opening and illuminates the passageway within. So the construction, according to archaeologists, and sure you're an archaeologist as well, they say it's a symbol of greeting the new year and a symbol of life's primacy over death as well. And it's older than Stonehenge and your precious pyramids of Giza. How does that feel?
Well, really impressive, because there is a link with Egypt as well there, because there's a similar thing in Abu Simbel, in the famous temple. There's also it also gets illuminated. One of the statues gets a ray of light also for the solstice.
Very good. Would you go there?
Well, of course I would go there. I mean, you've talked wonders about it and written lately about it, so yeah, definitely the best place.
Fantastic. Well, with all things to do with Ireland, to ask you some kind of Irish blessing at the end for, you know, stereotypes have to be fulfilled. So I will tell you, leave by a door through which you entered if you want some good luck. How do you feel about that?
Seems fair enough.
Well, to be honest, there's only one door in Newgrange, so that's right. Easily achieved. Okay, so, well, that's a wrap for me. That's bye-bye.
And bye. No, slan. What, slan?
Yeah, that's fine. Slan.
God, I'm not very impressed, are you? I used to say slan.
That was pretty good, huh?